Welcome to the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast, where we highlight nonprofit innovators, leaders, and influencers every week that are changing the sector for the better. I'm your host, Delaney Mullenix, Executive Director of Nonprofit Hub. If you're not for profit and all for purpose, you're in the right place. You see, we know you're already doing good, but we've designed this podcast to help nonprofit professionals find growth, joy, and connection. So tune in weekly for new episodes to elevate your cause, spread the news, and share the resources we share with you.
Cause Camp, the top nonprofit conference, is back this October 19th and 20th, and this time it's going virtual. Grab your ticket at cause.camp and reignite your purpose at Cause Camp 2023.
Hello, Nonprofit Hub. On this episode, I am joined by Amanda Kalamian. She is the founder and CEO of the Canna Foundation. This organization rewilds America's wild horses. She has some incredible stories to share. I hope you guys enjoy learning more about the organization, what she has been up to in her last 15-year journey, and what the organization has to look forward to soon. Please share a little bit more about yourself and how you got started.
Well, first, Delaney, I want to say thank you for having me and your interest in Canna Foundation and actually your work in and of itself. It's tough. Being a not-for-profit is not an easy task. And for those of us that are not weak of heart, we will tell you, you know, fighting for good is always difficult, but thank you. You know, how did I get started? Was that my question?
Who are you, first of all? And then, yeah, we'd love to learn more about Canna too, but let's start with who you are.
Oh my God. Well, that's a good question. Who am I? I am born to rewild, apparently. So about 16 years ago, I decided it was my sole duty, obligation to do something to help all the horses. I'm an animal person. I've ridden horses my entire life. They've been a part of my being since probably before I was born, but since I was three, when my dad first sat me on a pony ride. And they've been everything to me, gotten me through the best and the worst of times in my life. And when I realized that horses in this country were being sent to slaughter, it was shocking to me. So I reached out to the horse community that I lived in, horse show people, trail riding people, all of these people. And I was jumping up and down with this horrifying news that horses are going to slaughter and all these horrible things are happening to these horses that we love. Nobody really was interested. And that in and of itself was sort of eye-opening for me. So I set out to figure it out and see how I could play an integral role in saving, you know, and finding a better way for our horses to have their life after their useful jobs were over. And that journey took me to the understanding of what's happening to the wild horses here in our country. And in order to save those horses, we needed to figure out a viable solution for the government. And that is why I am born to rewild, because our horses are an integral component to helping us eradicate climate breakdown and grow grass, sequester carbon, and all the important things that we need to do today.
Well, that sounds amazing. I definitely want to talk more about how they play that integral piece. But just rewinding a little bit, at the age of three, you started loving horses. I feel like I'm from West Michigan, and there lots of people in my family are horse lovers. My aunt actually owns a boarding facility for horses and helps to train them. I feel like there's been this kind of uptick in, and like you said, you know, like your passion is helping a horse after they're done with their, what do you call it, their role or their purpose?
Well, people's useful work life.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like there's been an uptick in my area specifically for stables that are for equine therapy, equine assisted therapy. So that's something that I've seen more and more. Does that have anything to do with like your work? Do you have experience with that or?
Yes, of course. I guess it's how we view horses and it's how I view the horse. You know, horses were a mainstay in our life. I can take us all the way back to the beginning of time, to Dawn Horse, the very first horse that evolved here in North America, which was the size of a guinea pig. I can show you a picture. It's incredible when you see what the horse began as and how it evolved to be Equus caballus as we know it today. But from the beginning of time, the horse has walked the journey with man, evolved with man. You know, when we were evolving, they hunted horses for food to survive. Then we domesticated horses, right? They allowed us to domesticate them, and that created a new world for us. We were able to hunt in a different capacity, travel in a different capacity. Native cultures became indigenous. Right? It changed the world. Then wars were fought on the backs of horses. The West was created on the backs of horses. Train tracks were laid on the backs of horses. There isn't a community here that doesn't trace back to horse lineage for us.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, what has occurred is people don't see value in horses any more than recreational.
Mm-hmm.
Why they become disposable income, where so much of the value in their healing capacity, not only in their ability to befriend us or to ride, they are healers.
Right. As I think most animals are, truly, like your doggies are like with you right now. I think that all animals have the capacity to be very healing.
All of them in different capacities, right?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Think about this about a horse. Our spine is where our life force energy, right? Our spine is everything. That's where our energy flows up and down. And when you sit on a horse, it's interesting. Their spine is this way. When you're sitting like this, mm-hmm. spine is this way. So you're almost touching energetically.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tight connection. It's a close bond. They're very sensitive to us and us to them.
Very cool. When you approached people about this, you know, this thing that set a fire in your heart, right? Like you felt like ignited to do something about the fact that horses were being sent to slaughter and you didn't feel like a lot of people were interested in getting involved. Why do you think that was? Why do you think people were so ambivalent to this?
Quite honestly, people don't want to know unpleasant things.
Yeah.
They don't want to change their life. You know, they want to go to the horse show and they want that life. They want the horse show life at all the horse shows, whether it's in Florida or in their community, whether it's just, you know, local, however it is, they don't want to know what's not pleasant. And when their horse is no longer, you know, serviceable for them in the capacity that they choose it to be or want it to be, and the trainer says you need a new horse and their horse mysteriously disappears and the trainer makes it go away,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they said, well, we can't afford to pay for two horses. Nobody really wants to know. Some people care. I can't say everybody doesn't care. There are people that care, but people won't not get another horse or won't not do. I have yet to hear somebody say, you know, I didn't buy that new horse and I'm not horse showing anymore because I can't afford two horses and my horse can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I've yet to hear somebody say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are so selfless for us, but you know, our mindfulness is questionable.
Yeah. I mean, I think this has to do, there's something that I always find is an attribute of most nonprofit leaders, especially those who choose to open a nonprofit or start a nonprofit. And I think that it's this concept of moral imagination or moral intelligence. And regardless of the actual word, it means your responsibility to act in relation to what you know. And I feel like there are so many people who, even if you tell them, these horses are being sent to slaughter, it's easier for them to turn their back and keep living their life like they didn't know that, because it's difficult to tackle that problem. It's difficult to tackle that issue, and it's going to take a lot of work in order to confront that issue that we know, whether or not we know it to be wrong,
like the moral intelligence that you have is your responsibility to act in relation to knowing what is wrong or right. And that's something that I feel like is, like I said, an attribute in most nonprofit leaders. And that's why I love this sector. Like, even though it is hard, I would rather be surrounded by people who are going to do something about it than be one of the people who is informed, but still chooses to do nothing.
That's beautiful, Antolinia. Thank you for that. But I have to be honest and tell you that yes, and you have had the good fortune, I'm sure. I've seen some of the people you of your list, and it's impressive. And you've had the honor to be able to exchange with those people. But I have found some of the pitfalls. Many people for dogs, cats, and horses, they don't have the mindset you're specifically talking about. They end up being hoarders with their own victim. So their stuff, their victim, usually impedes their better judgment with their rescue.
Yeah. I mean, there is a balance. Like, you need to balance your passion with, I think this is, I mean, this is also a very common like topic that people talk about, is you can't just start a nonprofit because you have passion. You also need to know how to like operate a business and run a business. And like, there needs to be, you know, like these boundaries that you set. And also like this, you know, the concept of best practice, which a lot of people don't always love talking about, but yeah, you can't just raise 100 animals on your own because you want a better life for them.
I will tell you, it is very tough. People come to me all the time. Can you help this? Can you save this one? I have, you know, I get emails or texts, found three wild horses at, you know, at an auction, need money to buy them, to save them out. I mean, if I told you every day, and, you know, I will always do what I can to help. Right. But it is unfortunate that I've had to accept the fact that some of these animals will end up sacrificing their lives, hopefully for the greater good, because I can't save everybody.
Right. Right. Well, to that topic, although you can't save every horse, and that, you know, that is a personal, that's a hardship to have to deal with when this, that's so close to your heart, but tell us a little bit more about the ones you have saved. What is the Canna Foundation up to? Like, a little bit history about that, but yeah, like, what is your programming? What are you guys doing?
Well, programming is an interesting word. I don't know what my programming is. What's today's programming? Because nothing ever really goes according to what you
Yeah.
Especially in this world. So what is Canna Foundation up to? So the long, arduous journey of Canna Foundation is 15, 16 years, where it has been an uphill, struggling battle to where I could actually come to you with this statement. You know, what are the deliverables of Canna? Because there were so many.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, there were just so many to choose from, so many things needed. And it was always like a domino effect. In order to get here, I had to have all of these initiatives. So I'm the only person, there is nobody else who is approaching and attacking the wild horse crisis in Washington with this solution. We are a rewilding organization, and we advocate for wild horses as an integral component to the natural system, which is a direct phrase from the Wild Horse and Burro Act of 1971. And in doing that, we understand that horses play a key role in grassland ecology.
Mm-hmm.
So we advocate for that. So there's legislative work, there's lobbying work, there's educational work, right? That's what we do. We try to educate our congressional members. We try to educate, you know, department heads. We talk with scientists. We are science-backed information. We promote all these things and educating in, let's manage these horses in a better way than what's happening today. Let's give them a better life by allowing them to work for the American taxpayer. Just plainly, by allowing them to do what they do. Physiologically, they eat grass.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they process the grass and process seeds and forage and move around as they were created to do, right? As my friend Moses Springsplenty, who works with us, right? He's been with me for years at the foundation, always says they carry all the instructions, the original instructions from Creator. So let them work on the planet and do what they do environmentally, which is advantageous to us, which builds biodiversity, which grows grasses. Grasses can help capture the dreaded carbon in the roots of the leaves. And we're understanding now grassland ecology could actually be more important and relevant with wildfires and things than trees. Trees capture the carbon, right? The greenhouse gases and the carbon in their canopies. Now with all the fires from the drought, the heat domes, all of that carbon is now re-emitted into the air at multiples of what it was actually captured at. So they, horses, and simply by being herbivores, and a specific kind of herbivore, are even more important to us now than they ever were.
CauseCamp, the top nonprofit conference, is back, and this time it's going virtual. Get your tickets now and watch this year's dynamic sessions and interactive workshops. We promise you'll learn from all the wisdom in the room, and you'll have ample time for live Q&A with every speaker. Join us for 2 days of innovation and impact, all from the comfort of your own home. It's the ultimate nonprofit conference right at your fingertips. On October 19th and 20th, you'll learn from industry leaders and discover the secrets to driving real change in your career and your community. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out on your nonprofit journey, CauseCamp has something for everyone. Sign up at cause.camp. That's cause.camp. Now let's get back to today's episode.
There can't be a person in this world today that isn't concerned about forest fires. Like the impact that it's had on our daily lives, like even just this past summer, the summer before with all the fires in Oregon and all of that, it's extreme.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, in June, my daughter FaceTimed me. I'm on the North Shore of Long Island. She's in Manhattan. And she was in a car crossing a bridge. And from the fires in Canada, you had to see what New York looked like. It was out of a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not that far from you guys, but I do think that New York got hit before Michigan got hit. But we had relatively few sunny days, and it's not from clouds. It's from smoke.
I'm so sorry. I mean, and then I sit here and I look outside and everybody's inside. What did the news keep saying? Go inside. And then I'm thinking, what's happening to the birds?
Yeah.
I mean, the birds are flying up in the air. I mean, I'm waiting to see them all dropping down from the sky. It's horrifying.
Yeah. It's right. Yeah. Well, that is good to know that you, are on the forefront of knowing the benefits of rewilding horses. That's definitely something that I wouldn't have never thought of. What does the future hold for the Canna Foundation? Is there anything coming up soon that you are looking forward to?
Well, thank you so much for asking me that question. I was hoping you would ask me what's happening in my world. So actually, I'm leaving tomorrow. We have an amazing trip. It's been quite a journey. Just the trip's taken so many twists and turns, but the team, the Canna team, there are a good handful of us from all over the place. We are heading out to the Dakotas, and we have purchased 10 horses from a sale just yesterday at the Wheatland BLM holding facility in Wyoming. And we're very excited because those horses will be free. One of these horses that we purchased was a 9-year-old mare. She was born in captivity. She was born in a holding facility and has never known anything but that.
Mom.
These 10 horses are going to be living in South Dakota on tens of thousands of acres at an amazing person, man's ranch. It's a gentleman named Mr. Ron Brownotter and his wife, Carol. And he's the largest buffalo rancher in South Dakota. He is a member of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe community. And just he is in and of himself doing incredible work with his buffalo, building native grasslands back, acknowledging the buffalo historically, culturally, and bringing the buffalo back to his people in a good way, in a real way, as they say in Lakota, in a good way. And so they love horses. And of course, the Lakota are horse people. And so these 10 horses now are going to live at Mr. Brownotter's, and that we are going to be working together in monitoring how the horses and the buffalo together help to rebuild grasslands, native grasslands location in this area. And we will be working with Ron's traditional ecological knowledge, which is its native culture's way of saying rewilding. It's, you know, that is the original teachings of the creator, as I would say. And really, rewilding is simply bringing things back to an original state of being. So we are allowing nature to recreate itself and heal itself the way it knows how. And of course, from traditional native culture, that is everything about reverence, respect, and working with nature. Yes. So we are bringing projects together so that we can study each other, learn together, educate, bring the information out, and just keep bringing horses to new homes so that they can be free, and we will forever have the history and culture connected to these wild horses that roam the American plains.
That's incredible. That sounds like an amazing, amazing week that you have.
We're so excited.
Yeah. And congratulations on the purchase of the 10 horses. I'm curious, what were like their other possible futures?
They don't have one. They're the only future, the only opportunity for future they have, what their future is living forever on the federal taxpaying dollar in shipping around from one holding facility to another. I mean, that mare is 9 years old. She's never been anywhere. And they put them up for sale or adoption. And after three times, I mean, there's a whole process. If they can't, if it doesn't get sold, then they make it, then they have it for adoption. And if it doesn't get adopted, I mean, these horses get shoveled around to some long-term holding facility. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible existence for these poor animals because they don't live in any structure that is their way of life. They don't live in bands. They have no family bands. They have no freedom. I mean, they stand in holding facility. I mean, this particular holding facility there, I could see no grass. It was all mud. And, you know, the government is, you know, always short for holding facilities because they keep rounding up horses. And there are so many that they just round up. And last month, there was a terrible, you know, roundups are going on again now without rhyme or reason or proper protocols that the government is following at all. And there were 26 horses in less than 2 weeks that died from these roundups, broken necks, broken legs, babies.
No way.
Oh, yes. You can look it up. All the roundups, and they're always in Nevada. And there was, I work with, there's another woman, her organization is actually boots on the ground, front line. She goes to these roundups every day, everyone. They take video, they take photos, they, you know, they understand what's going on. They bring this information to the public so people can understand what's happening and try to hold the government to task about following their regulations, rules, and protocols, but the government doesn't. So, I mean, one mare was chased so hard by the helicopters that she was slamming into a gate, broke her neck, and was lying there dying as her little foal is standing next to her. I mean, babies can't keep up, broken legs. There was a story, there was a beautiful Palomino stallion, which was known. He was one of these these stallions that was particularly known to the area, people that travel through to visit the horses, you know, there are some that stand out and people give them names and they know he was called Mr. Sunshine because he was a big yellow horse and dearly loved by everybody. And he was a big stallion and they chased him into the holding the chute. And he tried to get out, trying to jump over. They all try to get out, right? And his leg got caught and it snapped in three places. He broke his leg and was running on three legs while they're chasing him for half an hour on horses and helicopters until they shot him. I mean, there are just no words for why. Why? Just representation of how we treat, how inhumane we've become. There's no humanity in humans. Mm-hmm. Why?
Well, thank you for sharing those stories. I mean, this is definitely the first time that I've heard stories like this. And it sounds like you've also learned that you've had to take your work to Washington to advocate for bigger changes. Running a nonprofit is a lot of work in and of itself. And a majority of nonprofits don't engage in that form of advocacy at that federal level. How do you balance taking on advocacy in Washington with sustaining all of the other things that the foundation is doing?
I have to be honest, it's difficult. Mm-hmm. The thing that I learned, here's the biggest thing that I've learned. I'm very honest and very outspoken. I hope that's okay for the viewers.
Yes, we honor that. We totally respect that. Okay. Yes.
Because I can only be this one person. I don't know how to be any other way. I will be politically correct and diplomatic, but always truthful and honest.
Yes.
Okay? I can't speak for all advocacy, but I can speak for wild horse advocacy, perhaps animal advocacy. And maybe it's because of the challenge of what it is. But in many cases, I find that not-for-profits are the business of advocacy. And there's a difference between running your not-for-profit in a meaningful, correct, business-like manner so that it operates successfully from a financial perspective, mm-hmm. and running your business like it is a business of advocacy. Mm. There is a difference. Okay. Advocacy is not to make money. Okay. Advocacy is to do good. Mm-hmm. Advocacy is to create change. To create change. And I have the mainstay of my work. If I don't have the funding for it, I find it myself. Mm-hmm. If I believe so much, I would rather than sell myself to something that I don't think is okay or that just perpetuates the system, mm-hmm. perpetuating the system, because I want to see change in the system because the system is broken. All the systems are broken and the systems in Washington are broken. And it is this wild horse crisis is the most broken system in Washington. And it's not just about the horses, because it's what the government is doing to the public rangelands that belong to the American people, which is our land. You pay taxes on that. And it is a multiple use mandate for those public lands for oil, fracking, hard rock mining, mm-hmm. and cattle ranching and cattle lobby. And so it is completely managed misappropriately. There is no balance. The American taxpayer pay the bill. The 1% of the 1% make all the money on
benefit
the tax
from it. Right.
And the horses are caught in the crossfire and pay the price. So I refuse at any cost. I don't care that it doesn't perpetuate my salaries, because there are no salaries. I take nothing. Okay? It is that it is wrong. So mm-hmm. I would rather fight for what is right. If I can't afford to do all of them, pick one, but fight for what is true and what is right. Mm-hmm. And this is where sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes the work weighs more in the political side and we spend more time doing that. And then other times we weigh more on the other side where we're working to raise money. Now we have an incredible project that we've just solidified our agreement with. And we are starting a big fundraising campaign for 70,000 grazing acres in the valley, in a valley in Idaho. And it is the most beautiful land. And it is truly the first, will be the first rewilding project here in the United States that will be just like the true projects in Europe. And It will be a forever home for hundreds of wild horses to be the keystone species that we know that they are. I mean, it is really truly wild. There are wolf packs, there are bears, there are sage grouse, there are all kinds of true animals. And the most amazing thing about this particular location is it abuts to the Montana border and on the side where Yellowstone is. So when we free the horses and we are rewilding this incredible valley, which ultimately has 400,000 acres, which we are hoping to be able to at some point own the whole valley and rewild all of that, we will have a wildlife corridor from Yellowstone all the way through to the Idaho. We call it the Y2Y because the wildlife corridors start up at the Yukon.
Wow.
And we follow the wildlife corridors for all the animals. And we will be an integral component in creating the addition of this corridor, and the buffalo that are over at Yellowstone will flourish here as well. So it is really, you know, so sometimes it depends. It's hard to balance, but, you know, depending on the need, sometimes legislation is a little heavier on this side, educating, fighting for what's right, speaking to people. But I will tell you, I've met some incredible legislators, as much as our system in and of itself needs fixing, there are some really, really good people.
Yeah.
In Washington that yeah. really want to do good things.
Mm-hmm.
On both sides of the aisle, CANA is a bipartisan organization. I don't care about anything else but your willingness to work together.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was super well said. And I hear you say, you know, there's always going to be too much to do. There's always going to be something to do, always something that's going to bother you, something that you want to take action against. But, you know, as you're leading this organization and you're trying to make a change, you just need to pick one thing and do it well. Focus on one thing that you can do in the now and do it well, and focus on it and put your attention and your effort there. And yeah, it's heavy probably to make that choice, and let go of the other things. But, I think we just need to be, you know, have that self-compassion for ourselves and trust that, you know, there are these other good people out there who are hopefully, you know, working towards the same change. But that's, yeah, very well said.
No, and I appreciate that. And that is true because, I've worked for 10 years with a gentleman. He was a former congressman, Steve Israel. And he's been a good friend, an advisor to the foundation. And when I'm going off into 50 different tangents in 50 different ways, because everything is everything, right? And it's all connected in some capacity. He has always said, stay in one lane and drive forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've said the word rewild a couple of times, and I kind of mentioned the definition is bringing something back to its original state of being. You've titled a book that you authored, Born to Rewild. Share a little bit more about that and what readers and listeners might find in that book.
So I want to acknowledge that when you say the definition of rewilding is bringing things back to original state of being, and I've titled the book Born to Rewild because my journey, as all of us, we all have a journey. So my journey as well to rewild those wild horses and do that has been my personal journey to rewild, to reconnect with who I am and who I, you know, bring myself back to an original state of who was I intended to be. I mean,
right.
What my soul purpose here? What resonates with me? Not with what job should I have because I went to school and this is what they told me I'm supposed to be, or, you know, I have to be an A-type personality and live this good life and have that good job. But who am I and what can I do and what should I do while I'm here? That's been the journey. And that should be the journey for all of us, because that's how we know who we are and that's how we're happy and fulfilled. And when you feel fulfilled, it's easy to do the good things, right, for everybody. And if we all worked in that way, right? So the book is a story about, it's my story. It's an easy read. It's kind of funny. I've been told it's sort of like, you know, if you sat and had lunch with me, it's like me talking to you, mm-hmm. me talking to you on a podcast. And it's my story of who I am, how I started this, you know, the trip I took out to the Hamptons, and when I realized horses were going to slaughter, I bought 3 horses over the telephone with my debit card, good online purchase, right? And, you know, a truck arrives with 3 rescue horses and what? So it's about my journey in lockstep with the journey for the foundation and how I got here. And really the story is, I want people to see that I'm no different than anybody else. We're all the same. I'm no better or no worse. We're all the same. And we can all do something if we want. Something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's a really beautiful story to read. I love how you had the really young lived experience as a child with horses. And now at your age now, you get to, you know, say that you founded this incredible organization. I think that's super beautiful.
You're nice.
Well, where can our listeners find and connect with you if they want to learn a little bit more? There's obviously so much more that we could have talked about, so many more questions that I certainly have for you, but where can people find you and connect with you now?
Well, canafoundation.org, right? Tell me, you know, info@canafoundation.org. Send me an email. Tell me what you'd like to know. You want to have a chat? We'll get on a Zoom. How you want to help? But we'd love the help. We always look for people's suggestions. Always want to know what somebody has to say. I always want to answer questions. I am not afraid of controversy and would like to hear things that you think, because I can always learn something if I didn't know something, but maybe I can help share and shed light on some facts that you don't know.
Right.
Right. I always ask, just be open to hearing what things are and, you know, let's try to work together. But contact us, or maybe you want a copy of Born to Rewild. We'd love to share that with you. So I'm happy, you know, if you'd like to read a little bit about us. But this is who we are. We have Instagram, Facebook, and
LinkedIn.
Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. You know, what's that always thing? Like us, FaceTime us, love us.
Yeah. DM me, comment below, all of the above. Well, that's incredible. And Canna, just for your guys' reference, is Canna. So CannaFoundation.org. We always try to include a segment at the end called Good News for Nonprofits. What is one thing that you want to share and leave our listeners with today, Amanda?
Well, here's some good news. First of all, thank you everybody who spent the time to listen and learn about the wild horses and the work at Canna Foundation. And the good news is that I'm hardcore not giving up.
I love that. Yes.
And I am here fighting the good fight for all of you, because when we put those horses on those large amounts of beautiful swaths of land, the land will be here forever, forever for us, for your children and your grandchildren, and that land and the biodiversity that those horses will help us to build will really play a big role in helping us to sequester carbon, and that you'll have a beautiful planet to live on.
Yes. Well, best of luck in all of your initiatives. Tomorrow, going out to the Dakotas, your fundraising, your campaign to get that land in Idaho. We're all rooting for you. And hopefully we'll all stay connected so that we can hear more about progress in all of these areas. But it was such a pleasure having you on, Amanda. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Delaney. I appreciate the time and all your insights. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week on the episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio podcast. Thanks for joining us for this Nonprofit Hub Radio podcast episode. For more resources on fundraising, marketing, and all things nonprofit, be sure to check out the number one nonprofit toolbox at nonprofithub.org. We hope you'll join us next week for another episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast.